Okay, everybody, welcome back to Conspiranormal. And tonight we're going to do something that we've actually done before, which is we're going to do... This is going to be like a kind of like a video edition of Conspiranormal, because we have tonight our good friend Chris Corey, who is a listener and fan of the show and has been on the show many, many times. And we're going to be talking about just kind of... paranormal themed, conspiracy themed, supernatural themed kind of media tonight, and especially maybe some older stuff. And I'm going to share some books that kind of formative for me. Surfiel's going to share some material, and Chris is going to share some material. So we think this is going to be pretty special. But do you think that you want to start us off with, Surfiel, about kind of the idea we had for doing this episode?
Yeah, well, we like kind of doing these, we've done these types of show and tell shows, for lack of a better word, with Chris, because he's a big collector of UFO ephemera and books and records and all kinds of stuff. I think that's how we initially met Chris, was through his Vintage UFOs Instagram page. And it's always cool to just, you know, look at people's collections, but also I think it's cool to just talk about the role that media plays in all these different subjects, because that's really where everybody gets into these subjects, is through media, whether it's books, radio shows like Art Bell or Unsolved Mysteries or In Search Of, you know, when you're a kid watching television, or like Time Life books or whatever it is. And that's really the vectors that all these subcultures and information spreads through. So just wanted to kind of talk about that with you guys and share things along the way. I think one thing that Conspiranormal always tries to do is be connected to the context and past of all these subjects, and not just, you know, in like a vacuum of whatever's the trendy thing on the internet. But this media really is what connects us to the past, and collecting it can give you the context for understanding the history of all this stuff. So I figured it'd be fun, and to get Chris on, there's really no one better to get on to talk about this stuff, and to have some visual accompaniment.
Yes, I agree. Sorry, almost disconnected my microphone there. So hopefully you guys heard that. Yeah, I'm going to put myself off camera real quick.
Uh-oh.
All good.
We are...
You guys continue.
Semi-live. He's going to get replaced by a hybrid.
Cool. So I guess we could kind of start with talking to you, Chris, about what were the first pieces of media that got you interested in UFOs and these adjacent subjects.
Well, you hear me okay?
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, so I was like a stay-at-home kid, probably from the time I was 11 until I was 18, and Sci-Fi Channel came out about that time, and early on they had a lot of, I remember watching stuff like In Search Of, and also I don't know what show it was. I don't think it was Outer Limits. I don't think it was In Search Of, but I have a really distinct memory of watching a show where they talked about the fish falls that, you know, Charles Fort would write about.
Yeah.
And that's like a really early, like weird stuff memory that I have. And I would do anything to find out what show it was I watched.
Yeah.
There was also Arthur C. Clarke's Unknown Universe or something like that. It could have possibly been that.
Yeah. And like, I don't know which ones, you know, What of those types of shows were, like fact-based, quote unquote? But I remember that really distinctly. And then and X-Files came out when I was 12, maybe 12 or 13. I don't know exactly where, but I mean, we just started watching that every week, my friends and I. Also weird, but my parents loved the movie Close Encounters of the Third Kind, and my parents are not into they're like not interested in me reading about UFOs or anything at all. But when I was really young, I remember this was like one of the first VHS tapes that we were running all the time. It was like that, Star Wars, a couple other, like Casablanca, like. But we watched Close Encounters of the Third Kind all the time. And now when I watch it, I'm like, oh my God, like this is probably why I am the way I am,
Yeah, it's a movie that I watched again and again too when I was a kid.
Especially when you're young, I think, those lines between fantasy and reality are so blurred. So you watch like a movie like that, and then you see some kind of documentary or fact-based TV show, and it's like, well, what if this is some of this stuff is kind of real in some kind of way, So that really just gets your imagination going.
And I saw, I mean, I think I told you guys, maybe not on the show, but I had a weird thing happen when I was a kid where I would have been nine, and something with lights all over it flew through the backyard of the house that I grew up in, and it was low. It was like level with the windows in my family's kitchen, which is like maybe 8 feet off the ground. It's like single family home with kitchens, like not quite on the second floor, but it's not quite on the first floor. It's low enough where I could see this thing in the backyard. And it was quiet, but we all saw it, and my mom and I freaked out, and my dad, kind of was very stoic. It was just like, oh, it's probably one of those little helicopters they use to fly over the highway. But like the house didn't shake or anything like that. And I have a written account of it that I wrote down a few years later, because what I did, and actually this will be the perfect segue, and then I'll stop, is I wrote a research paper when I was in probably seventh or eighth grade about UFOs, which I found, you guys know this, but during the pandemic, I moved home with my parents. I had been going to grad school, and it was pointless to be living where I was living. So, because classes went remote, so I moved home to try and save money. And also, just my parents are a little older, and I was worried they might need help. So I found the paper that I wrote, found all these little note cards that I had. But the book that my main source for the research paper that I wrote was this book, The World of UFOs by Daniel Cohen. And for years, I had no idea what it was. And I finally, a few years ago, was able to figure it out. All I remembered was it had this yellow UFO on it. And I probably showed this last time I was on here. But this was the place where I heard about Betty and Barney Hill, like Jacques Vallée, John Keel, and it actually, it's a really good overview of like everything up to the late 70s. Like the chapters are the swamp gas thing, the Condon Committee. It gives like an overview of ancient astronauts. It talks about New Age prophecy kind of stuff. It's got like a little chapter on the ultra-terrestrial. It's got the 1952 wave. Like, it's a really, like, a lot of people now would do really well to read this book. And it's written, I have a lot of UFO books, and I've been reading Abduction by John Mack recently, and I think it's terrible, but this book is just great. Daniel Cohen was a really, like, a really clear, accessible writer. It's obviously, it's written for kids, but But there's a lot of people out there now that I think could benefit from this book. I've looked around in libraries and stuff, and I've actually found Daniel Cohen wrote a lot of books, and they were targeted at young adults. And I've found Braille translations of a lot of those books too, which is really cool.
Cool.
Yeah.
That's really cool.
So I'm sorry for the long filibuster, but I hope that sheds some light for you guys.
Well, no, that's okay. Do you want to, well, how do we want to do this? Like, who wants to go first on showing what they have? I mean, I can if you
Yeah.
want. I mean, I've only got
Well,
like
I
four
wanted to
things.
talk a little bit about
Okay.
these. So in addition to these documentaries and television shows, that's one that's real common you hear. But then also, like this book and other of these encyclopedic books, I think were really influential in a lot of people. So, like, of course, Time Life, Mysteries of the Unknown. This is like the actual copy that I had when I was really young. There's even like the dog bite in it. But I just remember like all the photos and the illustrations in here are just really, really cool, and just how that put me in like a real altered state at a young age. And that's why like my photograph like I use for my profile picture on Facebook and stuff is me like chalking on the driveway a giant UFO, like with a beam coming down,
Right.
replicating some of the illustrations in that. So those encyclopedia books, like Mysteries of the Unknown, Man, Myth, and Magic. There's a lot of them. Do you remember stuff like that, Adam?
Oh yeah. I remember the Man, Myth, and Magic books
Yeah.
because they were in the public library, the one that I always went to, and like I remember them just like they were so weird that they kind of like scared the shit out of me when I was a little kid. But
Yeah.
and you couldn't check them out because they were considered reference books, so you just had to like read them in the library. So that's the kind of stuff that I would look at was those Man, Myth, and Magic books. And I'd love to see like a set of those somewhere.
Yeah, my friend Mike actually recently purchased the entire set.
Oh, nice.
So in like pristine condition with promo poster and everything. It
Yeah.
was really cool to be able to look
Yeah.
at that.
I mean, this was a time period that you had those people could like buy these like beautiful set of books and they would actually spend some money for them.
Well, and we had no, or most people didn't have access to any kind of database, or they'd have to go to the
Yeah.
library. So this is something that
Yeah.
you could have these sets at home for reference in your research, just A to Z of whatever subject, whether this kind of pop occult stuff like that, or all these mysteries like the Time Life stuff.
Yeah, those were a big one, and I've got a couple of those here too. This one was pretty big for me. It's called The UFO, The Continuing Enigma, which is showing up backwards. But it's a reader, it's actually put out by Reader's Digest. And this was one that, stuff like this.
Yeah.
I'm still pulling, I mean, I'm still using these things as reference, points.
Yeah.
But I still, I wrote something recently that used not too long ago that used the stuff in there. And like, this is probably one of the first places I heard of something like, the Flatwoods Monster, and all these weird kind of things.
I
And
think that's
so
something that
this book definitely made a huge impression on me.
Chris has definitely talked about before. The one thing that's really missing is illustration
Yeah.
and painting representations of all this stuff. Like that was a really,
Yeah.
really cool aspect of the aesthetic of all this stuff.
I mean, there's a, physical media just, the more we don't rely on it, anymore. It seems like the more that people actually are like, oh, I miss it, or that we've lost something, because you can get, any of this stuff, and even archive.org, you can see a lot of this stuff. But I think it's something about like having it physically in your hand. It's preferable. It makes a difference. Yeah, and it really captures your imagination. And when you see those like bizarre, uncanny, sort of drawings and the paintings and things like that, like when you see the cover of Communion for the first time or something,
I remember, yeah.
it
I
hits
mean,
you.
this book that I just showed you, it's probably where I first heard of somebody like, I think I'd heard of Strieber, but somebody like Bud Hopkins, it'd be the first place I probably heard about them, or Betty Andreasen, or any of the rest of that stuff. I would have heard from just like this, kind of just small, kind of sensationalistic book, really, if you think about it. But this that I'm showing you is the Brad Steiger's "Are You a Star Person or an Abductee?" quiz that you can take. So, yeah, I mean, little books like this, I don't even know who got it for me, even where it came from, but they can make a huge impression on you, especially as a kid with the pictures.
I mean, one thing that I'm looking at this book. Now the Daniel Cohen book, and it has a full bibliography in the back, and it's incredible. I mean, I'll just you've got like the George Adamski books, you've got They Knew Too Much About Flying Saucers, they've got Flying Saucers and the Three Men, and they've got like three or four different John Keel book, Mothman Prophecies, Our Haunted Planet, Strange Creatures. They've got the Flying Saucer Conspiracy. They've got Flying Saucers Are Real, but then they've also got like the Dragon in the Disc. They've got the John Fuller Aliens in the Skies book. Like it, there's probably like 40, 50 books on here that are all like, hits, like right up to 1976. There's a Coral Lorenzen book listed in there. And like you could just go through this book and read all of those and like, know more probably than anybody needs to know about the old flying saucer stuff.
I
And
think
that's another thing I feel like it does get lost now, when you don't have like these physical objects that point you in the direction of the other things.
or even if someone does reference something in like say recorded media like what we're doing, unless you go look it up at that minute and pause whatever it is, then you're probably going to forget, but this physical media with references are there, for you to refer back to whenever.
Well, I'll show you guys. I guess I'll go ahead and go and show you guys some of these other books that I picked out, and just a couple that I just thought of in just the last couple of minutes that were pretty important for me. So what I'm going to do whenever we demonstrate here, I'm just going to go ahead and pin. And so for the video audience, but one very important, and you guys will hear me, you guys, if you listen to the show, that you'll hear me reference and a lot, is this book that has no cover because I wore it out, but it is the Unexplained, which is the Jerome Clark book that has been through quite a few editions in the last few years. But this one, I mean, was a big deal to me. Like I devoured this book. I read it probably over and over, and not even like reading it straight through, more like going, because it's an encyclopedia, going to each and every kind of entry that I could possibly think of. So,
The same kind of thing, yeah, the encyclopedia.
right.
I mean, I want to say
Yeah, go
real
ahead.
quick that like I could see how people would think that we get kind of snobby sometimes on the show about trends and ufology or other things, but all this stuff was super accessible, and but I think it was elevated to a point, you know, where you really had the opportunity to take the interest further if you wanted to. And it was sensational, you know, and it was big companies like Time Life and Reader's Digest and all these guys, but it was still a great point of entry, I think, you know, for especially for kids.
Yeah. This right here that I would have seen, like, you know, where I found out about the Jersey Devil or about the Dover Demon, you know, first time I remember about reading about Lauren Coleman, you know, I knew none of these people or who they were at the time, you know. So it's like really cool to have actually gotten to meet and talk to some of these people, which is awesome, you know, kind of like a full circle thing for me. So that's one of them. That's a big one, especially like the Fortiana aspect of things that we talk about, or cryptids or whatever. I know this is a big one for Josh Cutchin too. You know, he cited it many times and talked about it with me. Another one very influential for me is this one called The Mammoth Encyclopedia of the Unsolved, which is kind of just like a mass market little, you know, compendium book, but you can see who it's written by, Colin Wilson, who was a very important author in all kinds of subjects, including these subjects, did a book about poltergeists and all this. But this one I still use for reference too. So like, you know, this is what have been where I would have heard about some, like, you know, interesting conspiracy stuff, or like, you know, talking about Bigfoot or Atlantis, a lot of stuff that I knew and a lot of stuff that I did not know. Really good entry here about possession by the dead, which is a like fascinating chapter. But then he talks about, you know, Rennes-le-Château or Saint Germain. It's just it's our historical mysteries or who Shakespeare was. I mean, this is, if you can find this somewhere, highly recommended. And it's kind of just, you know, it's a compendium, but it's also kind of, you know, in a way, a summary of a lot of what Colin Wilson was studying at the time,
Do you
and his
think that
brother
the
was involved too.
do you think that modern media like encourages things to be kind of siloed off into smaller subjects, and that when we grew up, maybe, or I don't know if this is true, but you know, there was really
I
this
see where
like
you're going.
tendency to look at everything, look at all the mysteries together, you know, and
Yeah.
that's how it kind they kind of cross-pollinated.
Yeah, I feel like in the last probably 20 years, it's been a little more siloed off from each other. Probably just the influence of like reality television would be one thing to me. This is another one, complete book of UFOs from the Y-Files. Just another great book, and it's really it's not an encyclopedia, but it's a history, which really appeals to me. And so, but it's pretty much got everything, at least until like the mid-90s when it was written. So it's a good like historical overview of the UFO phenomenon, and then it talks about the abduction phenomenon and stuff like Gulf Breeze and all these different things really appeal to me when you know, would watch the X-Files back in the day. So, and this is another one that, you know, to this day, in fact, just last year, you know, used it as a reference to do some writing. So, you know, that's another good one. It's still on the UFO kick. Now, this one called Watch the Skies. I did not like this book at the time because it debunked a lot of the stuff in the UFO that I held like really sacred at the time. And I was like, this book sucks. But now, you know, when I read it, when I looked it over and think about it, it's like, well, the book had a lot of good points. One of the interesting things that this author does is he starts off with actually Richard Shaver and how that ties in to furthering the UFO mythology. So this is really another good one. I think that he concludes it with like the but talking about misinformation. So this is much more my speed now, actually. Here's another good one. You might notice an interesting title on this one. Maybe a bit of an influence on me. But this is more in the conspiracy field, of course, my other big love, which this isn't a, this is more of an encyclopedia, and it's just like entries, and supposedly they everything like, you know, here you go, here's a good okay. This was actually at the bookstore that I worked at, and I just picked it up, and as you can probably tell, Conspiranormal might not be completely original, guys. Just saying. Sir Fiel knows this one. He had to borrow for a while. This is Everything is Under Control. Conspiracy, Cults, and Cover-Ups, Robert Anton Wilson. Another really good one. Just, you know, encyclopedia format. But going into a lot more of the magical weirdness, right? And connecting it up with conspiracy theories and all that. So that's a that's another good one. Somewhere I almost completely forgot about this one, but this one is like really important. This is like the Bible. And actually, about 3 years ago, Serfiel and I had the privilege of interviewing Jonathan Vankin about the well, not exactly about this, but his latest book at the time. But it was still awesome to like have him on the show, talking about it, or talking about, you know, just talking to him, rather. But several things in here, you know, first place I ever heard of James Shelby Downard, that's for sure. This was a result of me watching the JFK movie and digging even deeper into the Great Conspiracy. But there's a lot in this book, and it went through a lot of editions. I think it's we got up to like 70 or 80 greatest conspiracies of all time.
And most of these were just widely available in chain bookstores,
In fact, before I even bought this book, Walden Books. I don't know. I don't know if anybody else remembers Walden Books that's here, but I would go into the mall in Chattanooga and I would read this book. I never bought it until like several years later. And
And the conspiracy stuff would be right there with all the other mysteries and UFOs and
exactly, and
ghosts
it's
and
in its
everything.
own, it wasn't in its own section, it
Rage.
was all just mixed together. And that's kind of, you know, it's funny because how we consumed that media back in the day might be how we're regurgitating that media back now on our show.
Yeah, for sure.
More recent thing, but very proud of it, to have it, Altered Stakes. This is as far as like about the cattle mutilation meeting that happened in, I think, 82, but David Perkins sent a copy each to me and to Serfio.
Self-published, real
Self-published. You can see
DIY.
you can see the staples. So that's a pretty special thing to have.
When you first started checking out these types of books, Chris, where did you go? Where was there chain bookstores or people that had the stuff? Were there sections that you could hang out in for a couple hours and find weird new UFO books?
I saw people that had a few of these things, you know, just a couple of like, you know, those kind of mass market conspiracy things. I wish I had grabbed more, but the thing that really caught my eye was, well, you know what? I had this like catalog that you could mail away for like all kinds of like contraband. And I bet a lot of people remember what these were like, and it would have, you know, like everything from like stink bombs to like black lights to like swords and knives. And then there was a whole section of like all these books. And thinking back now, all of them had to have been probably from the Tim Beckley kind of like inner
Oh,
light
yeah.
thing. But that's where I heard, like, and each book had like a little description with it. And so that was the first place I, it's kind of like, I know a lot of people have had an experience like this too, where you weren't really allowed to go see horror movies when you were young, but you would go to the video store and read the back of the box.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
Okay.
so I had this experience looking at these books too. And so I remember very clearly, like, this was the first place I heard about like Roswell, Area 51, and then like the Trilateral Commission, and like just the Rand Corporation, like all the sort of like the greatest of the greatest hits.
Yeah.
And I mean, I grabbed, I brought, I have a full collection of the Beckley stuff and the Commander X stuff, but the one I grabbed was this like early copy of the UFO Silencers that I have, and it
Hell
has,
yeah.
I mean, it's got this like outlaw style of, cartoon
Yeah.
drawing on it,
Nice.
but
Nice, yeah.
the really early sort of like the crappiest and therefore the best of these. This one is square bound, which is nice, but it's only printed on one side of each page.
Yeah.
And that's sort of how you can tell. I have a couple like this. So my guess is that he paid somebody to bind them with these covers, but he must have had a free free access to a copy machine somewhere, and
Wow.
so he was probably running off all the pages for these, and then bring them to the binding. That's just speculation, but
It's
I don't know.
entirely possible with Beckley.
You
It's
know,
entirely possible.
he's one of the
Yes.
greats, and he's missed.
Yes.
But I mean, so get like just ridiculous stuff like this, like MIB alert, warning, warning, one by one. They have, I'm reading this upside down and backwards here, warned witnesses to remain silent. And it's so exciting when
Yeah.
you see it for the first time, because you know you're looking at something that you're not really supposed to be looking at.
Yeah, the stuff feels forbidden, even
It
though you just
does.
got it at the mainstream bookstore or wherever, or
I'm
from a
sure you would have
catalog.
had to mail away for this one, but they for sure had stuff like that
Yeah.
in mainstream. There was like a Tower Records that also was a Tower Books out where I
Tower Books
lived.
was great for countercultural stuff and for all this kind of material when I was young, yeah.
I mean, that was a place, it was like as big as the Amoeba chain stores on the West Coast, but they had so much stuff, and they had areas that like couches and stuff there, so it was like they understood that teenagers were going to come there and just post up for a few hours,
Yeah.
and it was never really a problem. So you'd see a lot of that, those kind of those later 90s like post X-Files Tim Beckley publications there. There's a store near me now where they've got a bunch of dead stock ones, copies of those types
Is
of books.
that the one that I met you at?
That's the one I took you to,
Yeah.
Adam. Although the thing that I find is the more and more I pick them up, every time I find one that is something that I haven't seen before, it's mostly recycled material, and I sort of figured out the pattern of all these books now, that there's always a section on Richard Shaver. There's always a section on sort of like the Bill Cooper type stuff, and then there's always a section on MK Ultra, and it starts to like all it's hard to tell them apart after a while.
It'd be cool for someone to undertake that again, but try to do it. And the challenge to make it fresh, like an encyclopedia type of book of all this stuff with some kind of actual like countercultural cred to it, and that'd be a cool endeavor. Definitely don't have the time for that, but.
It seems impossible. I mean, the astounding thing about Tim Beckley is how many, like, it's limitless. Like, there's just every time I think I've seen all of those books, you see another one, and it's hard to know, you know. He's like a exploitation director, you know, in that like he's always repackaging old material with like a new name or something like that.
He's like the Master P of the UFO.
Oh yeah, that's a good comparison too. But we, you know, like you see like a director like Jess Franco, you know, who has like 300 movies credited, you know, and like he did make like 100 movies or something because he was like a extremely cheap and fast director, you know, working in Europe. But then you see like all of those movies are released under like four different titles, you know, again and again. And that's the tradition that Beckley came from. And it's incredible how much stuff he put out. Most of it is, you know, most of it's kind of garbage, but then some of it's really entertaining and all of it is really charming to me.
Yeah, for sure.
I think that's a good strategy though, just like put out whatever and then whatever clicks, clicks.
See what sticks, yeah.
He lucked into, I mean, he must have sold so many books when the X-Files came out because first season or two of that, you know, as soon as they start talking about Roswell, and it's like, you know, a couple years after sort of their, you know, Ben the Bill Moore book and everything like that. But really, like that show reintroduced that into the consciousness. And then, like every Crown books that you walk into, there's just a bunch of those oversized paperback books. They're like, you know, most of them have like yellow or bright green covers, and you sell those to young people and weirdos. And he must have made so much money.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, killed a lot of trees.
What else do you want to do you want to show?
Let me see what I grabbed here because I grabbed some stuff and actually I don't know what happened, but I had oh here it is. Well, in terms of like the mass market stuff, you know, I grabbed like you know the one of the Jim
Oh,
Keith books I
yeah. Oh,
have,
nice.
Saucers of the Illuminati.
Nice.
I mean, realistically, like, is this any more, you know, it's like written at a little bit of a higher standard than a lot of the Beckley stuff. But, you know, Jim Keith was writing a lot of that stuff for Tim Beckley, like, you
Yeah.
know, and so this is almost the same thing, but it takes that, you know, sort of darker conspiracy. It's a little more bleak in some ways. You know, so I grabbed that and I mean, you know, I don't know, we don't really need to talk about Bud Hopkins or anything, but at just seeing this for the first time with the stretched out type, the Intruders paperback was just, you know, it's so haunting.
Yeah.
I don't think anybody cares, but I found one of my favorite thrash metal bands is you guys know I listen to a lot of heavy metal, and there's a band called Dark Angel that were kind
Yeah.
of affiliated with the Slayer crew back in the day. Their drummer Gene Hoglan was the lights guy for Slayer and supposedly taught Dave Lombardo from Slayer how to play double kick drums. And Hoglan has gone on to be like one of the most in-demand heavy metal session drummers over the last like 20, 30 years. Looking back at a really old Dark Angel interview, and Dark Angel is one of my favorite of that crop of like American speed metal, thrash metal. And he references, they're like, "What are you reading?" And he's like, I just read Intruders, The Incredible Visitations at Copley Woods." He uses the whole title, and he's like, "You have got to read this. It is, you know, sobering by how frightening it is." So
Yeah.
that's my
I think that's
monologue about
important
that.
that all of this material was like within these subcultural and countercultural contexts, and like, you know, is
Yeah.
what cool people read, you know, the weird shit, the shit that inspired music, whether it's something like Dark Angel or whether it's like gangster rap inspired by Behold a Pale Horse
Oh
or
man,
whatever, you
Surfeel,
know.
I have the Kill Army LP. If you
Oh
I'll go grab it. I'll go grab it when you're talking. I'll show that in a minute. Because it's called Silent Weapons for Quiet Wars.
Yeah, which
And
is,
there's like a
yeah.
whole bunch of Bill Cooper stuff on that record.
Yeah,
And
and
Kill
like,
Army was a well, I mean, but for
yeah.
anyone listening, Kill Army was it was sort of they were like probably like younger cousins of the guys from Wu-Tang Clan, so I think they were maybe working out in New Jersey as opposed to Staten Island, but I'm not an expert. I don't really remember. But at the time when like anything related to RZA was getting sort of signed and distributed, they
Yeah.
got, this it's a big record. It's like a double LP. And it's got, it's totally steeped in the, Behold a Pale Horse stuff.
Yeah, and Goody Mob had that had a hit record that makes like so many references to Behold a Pale Horse. I mean, but yeah, these were like in context of all this countercultural stuff. Something like Apocalypse Culture was so in the like late 80s. Church of Satan was so tied in with like industrial music and all that.
Yeah, Adam Parfrey was like a, Sonic Youth, Throbbing Gristle kind of fan, right?
He was really into all that stuff. But that's something I think is kind of missing now. From this type of media as well, as he's like, I guess culture itself is just like different now. Things don't all revolve around music, but I feel like when we all grew up, everything revolved around music. So all these things fit in there as like countercultural knowledge, as subcultural knowledge, or, if you had this anti-establishment mindset, you were questioning official narratives, and that's kind of what these books did. And so it was like it was there within that context for a lot of these people, I think.
I mean, I think there was like a culture of sort of like passing things around in a
Yeah,
way
for sure.
more
Yeah.
like physical objects and be, it's there's no way to not sound like a old boomer,
Oh, we
but
are. It's okay. But this is about a celebration of physical media, so
but
that's
it's
what,
different when you send somebody a file, I think, as opposed to like, hey, here's that book I said you can borrow. You like you take it home and you can't wait to read it, and it's not instantaneous, and you might only have it for a finite amount of time.
I mean, I think something
Maybe.
that relates to like some of the research I'm doing about conspiracy theory and the impact that it is actually having on people psychologically and otherwise is that like ritualistic behavior and religion, spirituality, things like this depend a lot on texts and ephemera, and having a copy of the Bible, is going to get someone into an altered state probably a lot faster than them like reading it off of a phone or something like that.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
If you own a vehicle with less than 200,000 miles and have an auto warranty about to expire or no warranty coverage at all, listen up. CarShield has a low-cost, month-to-month vehicle protection plan that covers more parts than ever. Visit carshield.com/audio to find out how you could pay almost nothing for covered auto repairs. Drivers who activate this vehicle protection today will also receive free roadside assistance, free towing, and car rental options at no additional cost. Get your free quote today at carshield.com/audio. That's carshield.com/audio.
Or like ritual paraphernalia, gets people into states of mind as part of their practice or devotion or whatever. And I think a lot of this type of material gets people into this mysterious, decompressed, altered state of mind, but like interacting with this physical stuff. And it's just part of what's hardwired into us, you know. Other than just, you know, as opposed to just staring at screens, which we all love to do, but like as far as that kind of countercultural stuff, I wanted to we can kind of get into some magazines, zines, and ephemera type of stuff, and just to show, you know, something that people think of as like, oh, dumb stoner culture now, like High Times, like used to be have pretty great journalism and have all kinds of conspiratorial and paranormal adjacent stuff. So this is like what year is this? This is 76, so it's pretty far on, but it was a big part of countercultural stuff like that, even earlier, like
Especially in the wake of Watergate.
yeah, this is a copy of the East Village Other, which was Walter Bauert's early yippie zine. And you know, the hippie subculture really pioneered the alternative press stuff and the new school of journalism that is really the genesis of so much of the style of all this later writing and journalism that, you know, from conspiracy theorist people to UFO guys or whatever, but then like super mainstream, you know, like this is the famous feature in Time magazine, The Occult Revival, and it's got that spread with Anton LaVey and stuff. Really cool. But yeah, Chris, do you have any zines with you?
Yeah, I grabbed some sort of small specialized magazines and publications, just kind of at random here, but I
Yeah.
have some fun stuff. Let's see. Well, in terms of zines, the one that I actually just grabbed at random, this is a Dharma Combat number 9.
Hell yeah.
And let me tell you, I found all the Dharma Combats around like summer 2020. I was reading those as the world was sort of falling apart, and it certainly had a sort of a decompressing effect on me,
Yeah.
or maybe a compressing oppressing effect on me. But I mean, one of the things that I really like about Dharma Combat, I don't agree with a lot of the stuff that's written in it, and some of the stuff I think is still amazing and dead on. It does seem to be one of the last places where, you can kind of say anything, and it doesn't seem like anybody is. It seems like they really want to be open to anything,
Yeah.
outside of crazy fascism or something like that. I mean, that seems to they really the idea of tyranny is really what they hate.
Yeah, that's really that like hardcore libertarian
It is,
libertarianism
yeah.
at its best type of thing.
I don't know if I want to give the libertarianism that much credit, but it's a
Well, I mean that in
well-made.
like a wider, you know, a wider definition.
Oh, sure. Okay. That is interesting because they do cross over with sort of the anarcho-punk stuff in a
Yeah.
couple of these,
Yeah.
where you see
That's
they're like.
really what I mean by that. Yeah, kind of like the left and right anarchist tendencies really cross-pollinating in a lot of that material.
Yeah. Somebody would do well to get a compendium of all of these. I think there's probably some stuff in these that we consider, to have not aged well, but like as a document, as an anthropological sort of artifact, I think those are really important, and they're beautiful. Like this one has this really stylized, kind of graffiti style artwork on the cover,
Oh
and
yeah. Yeah, that's nice.
it's just the I, there's a there's one that it's got like a hot pink cover, and it says it's something like "Die You Scurvy Dogs" on it or something. It just has some really, really incredibly well-drawn artwork on it. And then the layouts are done by hand, but they're done very carefully, so they look incredibly good.
Well, something like that. I mean, you're really seeing the context of Jim Keith and like everyone and thing that was around him and corresponding with him, as opposed to if you just have like a single book.
And it's really it's like, I mean, the thing about any sort of periodical publication is obviously it's up to the minute. There's like things that fall away from here that don't make it into the the Jim Keith books, and it's just a little more like spontaneous or something. It's just like a little crazier, which I think is good for this stuff. Let's see, I grabbed this is a I got a bunch of issues of the Amalgamated Flying Saucer Clubs of America magazine. This is from the 60s, and this is just that
Wow,
sort of
cool.
hardcore, like this is like the Aaron Gullius zone.
Yeah, for
I
sure.
don't know Aaron very well. I've talked to him maybe two or three times, just very briefly, but this is like the Lester Rosas story. I think there's a Bob Renaud section. Yeah, here it is. The Bob Renaud story continued. This is part 40. That's 40 of the Bob Renaud story. And here's all his radio equipment that I think, if I remember right, he's kind of like channeling entities using this radio stuff. And he's, I mean, these things look really nice. They're like, very professional looking, and they kind of have this like pseudoscientific journal kind of diagrams of the flying saucer, and where the bathroom was and where the conference room is on the like this is actually a layout of conference room number 2. I'm not sure if this was on board the flying saucer or where, wherever they went to, whatever space command center. It's sort of it's beside the point, but again, it gives you like a really good snapshot of that time. I've got some of like the bigger magazines like Info and Search. Let's see, this issue of Search has Alien Psychology, a UFO picture album, and an interview with Eric Von Daniken. So this is obviously the late 70s if Eric Von Daniken's in it. Info is more of it. Well, they build themselves as the International Fortean Organization, and it's more kind of all the Fortiana stuff. So you've got some cryptids and some book reviews and maybe a strange thing falling out of the sky. But the last thing, this is not so much a zine, but this is one of the Leonard Stringfield crash retrieval status report things, and this is part 3.
Whoa.
And so this is like, we're looking at these are all sort of self-published or independently published, but I feel like something like this is sort of the next level. And again, it's a pseudoscientific sort of what would you call it? Like, it's not a literature review because
It's
he's
a
not.
report, right?
Yeah, I guess he would just call it like a report. Well, the real hot piece in this is if I could find the page. So he did a few of these, and he would just run down every reported UFO crash at the time, and sort of, he would add commentary. He would give what the quote unquote story on it was, talk about any sort of items that might have been found at the scene. But this is the one where he talks about he recovered an alien hand. And so he's diagramming the like a the bone structure of the potential hand. Here's a photograph of what's purported to be an alien hand that I'm sure is like a monkey or something. I mean, I love it because it's just so ridiculous, but it's so thorough. And then it's also Beckley, Tim Beckley reprinted this a bunch of times. This stuff, these pictures of the hand.
So that's like a really a source material for researchers. I could, and the more pseudoscientific it is, the more that looks good in your reference, that you're
That's
referencing this
absolutely
real
right.
report.
All these cases are given, it's like case B8, this sort of like quasi-official like
Classification system.
classification system, whereas like and Stringfield was a guy who was really out there just trying to catalog all this stuff. He seemed sincere, everything I've heard about him. He was just out there looking for the smoking gun that, presumably never found it. I don't know who sent him the alien hand story. I'm sure that's one that you could probably trace back now, and it's probably Rick Doty or something like that. But these kind of like self-published, I mean, just nobody's doing anything like this anymore, I presume maybe at, well, I don't know if does MUFON, they still exist kind of, right? Even though like all those people have sort of left in disgrace over, various disgraceful things, but they're not, printing up stuff like this still, are they? Maybe for the, what if they still have a yearly conference or something like that, but there's just nothing like this. Nobody's.
If anyone's doing stuff, it's just online. I mean,
What's the humanoid classifications guy? The guy that has like the like exhaustive catalog of like humanoid sightings. What's his name? There's stuff out there,
I don't know.
but
On the tip of my tongue, but
yeah,
yes, I know who you're
you guys
talking
know who I'm
about.
talking about.
Yes, I know who you're talking
But he doesn't have the alien hand. So I think like all that stuff is important. I mean, in different ways, but
Yeah, absolutely.
specifically like the stuff like the these reports that sort of gave this like an air of seriousness. And you could see why all these people, people like David Perkins and Linda Howe could take themselves so seriously, because it felt, I think it felt different to them at that time. It also just seems like, in a weird way, even though we have, like all this like congressional acknowledgement stuff going on now, it just seemed like there was more happening then, and I think maybe that's just Cold War stuff.
Yeah, I
Don't
think
know.
it's like the way to think about it is counter expertise, like, and if you took the time to actually publish something or put together something like that, you could feel that you're at the same level as some, official expert or scientist or, whereas now like everything's leveled, but it's like, oh, you're just some guy on the internet who gives a shit,
And I think like here's the thing, like it's easy to like kind of like laugh off like the alien hand photo in here, right? But I'm sure if you sat down with Leonard Stringfield in like 1982, like he could give you so much raw information about all of these cases, and he would know all of these cases because he studied and researched all of these cases. And it's very likely that he was given a lot of misleading or incorrect information for, a wide variety of reasons. But he did attempt to do the work. And so although I'm laughing at the absurdity of the alien hand, it, like a lot of hard work from these people went into this that I don't think that there's really anybody doing that kind of hard work anymore that I'm aware of. I could be wrong. Like, I don't know everything, you know, maybe you guys know something. But I don't think that there's, it seems like that generation, that crowd of people really felt like they were right on the edge of it, you know, where mm-hmm. it's just out of their grasp.
Yeah. I think it was, I mean, in a broader sense, it was this idea from the 50s on about trying to prove this as scientifically as possible.
Yeah. Yeah.
And no matter what that form took, that's what they were going to try to do. You know, they weren't too interested. They wanted to prove this as an absolute physical phenomenon.
Sure. And I mean, you know, they kind of like they wanted to prove like a unified theory of it. You know, there can't be like more than one reason that these funny things are happening. Yeah, you know, and it's too bad that well, whatever that was, whatever that era is, it's long gone now, you know.
Yeah,
we've just got Mr. Corbell's string of documentaries.
Well, and I want to get back to some of this discussion about like books and this ephemera and maybe videos, some other stuff, but that does make me think about how there is this really almost a lost generation of early internet that's pretty much gone unless you know go through the Wayback Machine and find these like abandoned GeoCities hyperlink crazy websites. Because you know, I think some people were left over from those kind of eras and they were like, oh hell yeah, we've got these tools now to like, you know, put this across the world and to really commit this to some kind of permanency. And it was like the total opposite. And everything since has really been moving away from even website based things to apps. And like, as I see, you know, we're all guilty of it, you know, sharing stuff on all these apps, but it's like no one has real estate. There was a lot of ambitious website projects, you know, that really are just gone, you know, or only retrievable through that. And if we lose Archive or the Wayback Machine, you know, I just feel like it's going to be just such a loss of so many pieces. That piece, this past we're talking about to the present, there's like this big missing gap for a lot of people.
I think a lot about the blogs. When the blog explosion really happens, like during the aughts, and like how many, you know, like how many there were because of the 9/11 truth stuff.
Yeah.
You know, I feel like a lot of it really grew out of that. And the Occupy stuff. And I mean, you know, nobody's blogging now. I understand that some people are blogging now, but
like we thought that was going to be like a big, you know, citizen journalistic type of thing that was just going to continue to exist and get even bigger. But yeah, it didn't.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, to me, Blogspot was like as ubiquitous then as like as Twitter is now, you know?
Yeah.
And unfortunately, like the answer to the question you didn't ask is like what became the sort of like citizen journalist sort of format, and it's Twitter.
Yeah, or the video. I mean,
yeah, and I guess since then, now that the sort of like the YouTube personality and the video essay have sort of been like codified, we have those too, but unfortunately now with the AI capabilities that like any person has, you can create those videos with a, you know, synthetic voice and synthetic imagery. And you know, I don't know exactly where things are at now, but
Yeah.
it's not exactly.
Well, and the medium is a message, you know, for these personalities. So like now, you know, all these people are trying to be, a lot of people are trying to be like what they think is some kind of hyper real like media personality, and then a whole generation of kids is growing up with the same style of speech and everything, to the point where, you know, you're real weirdos that pioneered so much of this stuff. Like, where's the room for those type of people, you know, who could write books and stuff? It's just totally different.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, who knows with anything like that. It's hard. It's really hard to, you know, look at the long term. You know, like what? How's that going to shape? For all I know, like, you know, we could be talking about video essays 10 years from now, the way, you know, I was just talking about Blogspot.
That's true.
Yeah, it's totally unpredictable where the culture is going to go. Who knows?
So, Chris, in the time that we got left, do you have anything else that you want to share? Or, like, Serfiel has some things that he wants to share as well.
Serfiel, you should start yours, but I'm gonna run and I'm gonna just grab the Kill Army record to show.
Okay, cool.
Cool. All right. I'll
All
be
right.
right back, guys, but you could start if you want to.
Okay.
Okay, cool.
What you got? What you got for us?
Well, I got some continuation of like zines that's still going on. I've got this guy Joseph Green's zines about different things, mostly your still some of your classic 60s and 70s COINTELPRO, Jonestown, JFK type of stuff. I got these at little 5 points in Atlanta. So this is cool. This is someone really continuing those kind of traditions. We actually really want to get this guy on too. He's really
I think I have.
he's really cool. Yeah, we actually got that conspiracy coloring book that we've been meaning to give away at Strange Realities, but never got around to.
Yeah, I think I've got this one as well. I think this is the same guy.
Yeah. And then I always like to get well, we've talked about before some of the music, culture, context, and other things like that for a lot of this stuff, but these personalities a lot of times had different interests, so you have a lot of artistic people, and so I like collecting people I've met or we've had on the show, collecting their other endeavors. And so like the Gary Revell guy we had on the show, this is his 45 record that he put out while he was investigating the special investigator for the James Earl Ray trial, conspiracy theory that you know, he didn't kill Jet or Martin Luther King and all that. I couldn't find it from the move recently, but I know it's around here somewhere. But we have we got had an a guest named Bobby Baranowski, who is a drummer for a 70s kind of proto punk band called The Werewolves, and he gave me and Adam a record. So that's always cool to see these other artistic and musical interests that these people had as well. Let's see. I did want to kind of showcase this. These three books I think are interesting because it shows like a direct line of, I guess, what you could call radicalization into further conspiracy theory at a particular time in history. And so, like, first you have A Choice, Not an Echo by Phyllis Schlafly, which is talking about how the establishment Republican Party was blocking Goldwater, you know, because you didn't really have a choice of who was going to be president. The establishment, the insiders were going to choose for you. So then, soon after that, this book came out called None Dare Call It Treason, which was a huge book as well, which got a little more conspiratorial. Now they weren't only establishment insiders, but some of them were, in fact, they weren't as hawkish because they were pro-Soviet and actually traitors, you know, within the government and within the establishment, especially the Eastern establishment tied to the CFR and all that stuff. Then it gets even further into none dare call it conspiracy, which was really big. And I believe John Birch Society ended up at some point putting this out, but this was a huge smash that really introduces this idea, kind of a proto New World Order thing, of the global financial elites are actually all in cahoots with the Soviets, you know, and it's all one big conspiracy. So that's cool to see, like, an actual basically a rabbit hole, you know, of the mid 60s that would get you into this, which would then reference your source texts of, you know, the biggest of them all, the Illuminati theory of history.
And I have Call It Conspiracy.
Yep. I've also got None Dare Call It. I don't know. There's a lot of None Dare Call It. So that was a big deal. So then that gets into, this was your copy, Adam, but you let me hang on to it. Actual source texts, you know, of the, Illuminati conspiracy theory, classic proofs of a conspiracy, et cetera, by John Robison, which was published by John Birch Society's imprint, Western Islands. This is part of their Americanist Classics, where they printed a lot of the source material, but it's very obscurantist and British chauvinist, and you know, no one's gonna really read this except just for the most, you know, hardcore researchers. But this is like the, you know, the end level of source material. And I think in conspiracy theory, I think a contemporary of that would be something like this. This bootleg copy of Tragedy and Hope, which is like, I don't know how many fucking pages, like 1300 pages or some shit.
Oh yeah, it's massive. Know,
yeah, and so like this is more of that source material stuff. No one's going to actually read this besides really hardcore researchers, but it is going to be used endlessly. Passages are going to be decontextualized to fit whatever is going on from something that at the time, you know, Carol Quigley just thought was a mainstream foreign policy musings of someone who had been in the foreign policy establishment their whole life. Same thing with like, this is a republishing of a really famous basis of anti-occult conspiracy theory, Occult Theocracy, but this time it's published by Defender, which is the late Tom Horn's imprint. But again, you know, so this stuff is like the ultimate source material of a lot of this conspiracy theory stuff that's often so cumbersome that it's really not accessed by a lot of people, but it's easy to weave your own narratives with the stuff because it's so cumbersome and complex, and you can take stuff out of context. So I thought that was interesting to talk about. That's something I'm really interested in right now, kind of tracing the origin of a lot of these conspiracy theory narratives. And, you know, not to mention even nowadays where no one's even reading books, you know, the majority of people who are into this stuff. So yeah, that's that.
Did you have some slides you wanted to share with some pictures?
We can do that in a little bit. We can talk about records for a second.
Okay, that's fine.
I grabbed a
We just
couple.
gotta, Chris, if you're cool to hang in, we could go a few more minutes.
Yeah, of course. I grabbed my Flying Saucer records. I
Yeah, I want
just
to see
got
those.
the UFO message, the Will Jima sort of private press. It's kind of just him talking about flying saucer stuff, and giving you kind of like a contactee narrative. The cover does have this really great sort of line
That's
drawing
cool.
of a guy getting dragged off to a flying saucer. And I think there was a Saucer Life episode on this. And I saw a cheap copy come up, so I went for it. But I've also got like this Long John Neville sort of
Yeah.
compilation, which is really cool.
I got mine too.
Oh, you got that one. Oh, yeah, nice.
Yeah.
I got Frank Edwards, Flying Saucers Are Serious Business. I might have shown this one before, but it's signed by Frank Edwards in 67. So that's pretty
Oh, hell
cool.
yeah.
Yeah, I got
Serious business.
Serious
Serious.
Business.
Serious business.
UFOs, The Credibility Factor, which is one of the better titles. And I really like this one. It's a double LP called UFO Encounters, and
I've seen that, yeah.
If you can get it, it's cool because it sounds like it's just a documentary that they just took the audio from and put it on an LP. So you get like some sort of expert testimony and then a little bit of narration. But the best thing is it came with a CUFOS mail away form, and it's where you can report a flying saucer. So you can draw the picture in here, and
Nice.
there's sort of
Oh,
like a
awesome.
survey on what you saw. And it's just, it's really pretty incredible. And this gotta be, 1978. And it's not lost on me that it's called UFO Encounters. This is released a year after Close Encounters. This is surely meant to capitalize on that.
Oh, yeah,
Probably
why
raise a
not?
little money for the Kupos people. Let's see. We've got, yeah, okay, so Hynek is on here. We've got a Betty Hill testimonial, Gordon Cooper, Colonel Robert Friend, who is involved with Blue Book. There's a crash saucer investigation, sort of like a last minute addition to them. So I don't know. I've got those flying saucer LPs, and they're all pretty fun. And I also, real quick, we were talking about speed metal before, and this is a band called Agent Steel, who are a speed metal band from LA, but all of their stuff is flying saucer themed. And they were on Combat
Yeah.
Records. I think their second record, which I have here, might be on. No, they're both on Combat. I was gonna say maybe they switch labels, but this one, first of all, it's called The Skeptics Apocalypse. So we're coming for the skeptics, but the inner sleeve has all this sort of, Chariots of the Gods stuff, and got some like kind of there. I think that might be a Gulf Breeze flying saucer because it looks like
The lamp.
the lamp, yeah. And they would come out. The pictures on here, they just look like regular rockers, but there's a home video where they come out and they play in sort of those like orange jumpsuits from the TV show V. So they leaned into it. And I tried for years to do an interview with this singer, and he is very elusive. I think he thinks he's a really big deal. He could sing really high. If you like Judas Priest, it's worth checking out. But here's the Kill Army LP, Surfeel,
Yeah.
Silent Weapons for Quiet Wars. If you read the Bill Cooper biography that I think the guy's name is Mark Jacobson did 5 or 6 years ago, he talks a bunch about this. And also there was a rapper who just went by the name Bill Cooper. And so he really like dissects why Pale Horse sort of resonated with the hip hop community, I guess. I
Yeah,
am
I would
certainly
say
not.
just like the larger African American community and what was going on in alternative African American spirituality at the time.
He talks
obviously
about it a bit in the book, you know?
Yeah. It's, where is it at here? It's actually, that's the first chapter too of, We'll Hold a Pale Horse.
After I'm certainly intro. Not the person that should be telling anybody about African-American spirituality or trends within it. Yep.
Illuminati exactly. Declaration of lore of war upon the people of America. This is a really cool type of thing in UFOs and conspiracy theory are these mysterious pseudepigraphia, you know, these texts that purport to be like silent weapons for quiet wars was supposedly found in like what's the name of the printer, the printers with the
dot little, matrix printer.
Yeah. Dot matrix printers, is supposedly found in one at like a sale of government surplus or something like that. You know, and that's something you find in old,
it's kind of like the report from like, what was that? Iron Mountain. It's kind of like that.
Yeah. I mean, and
where it's like really dubious of actually where it comes from.
Of course, we were talking about Jim Keith earlier. We have Commander X and, you know, so I guess now it's even easier. So much of like what people consume has just absolutely no source or author at all that anyone knows of. But back then, you know, a lot of these books were, had an even more mysterious air because, you know, the authors themselves are mysterious or whistleblowers or, you know, or had some kind of former military pedigree or former insiders or something like that.
Yeah. I mean, like the sort of the deep throat paradigm really, like, you know, got extended for a long time.
Yeah.
Well, Chris, I know that it's getting kind of late over there for you. Was there anything else that anyone wanted to share before we call it a night?
Yeah. This is one of my most prized possessions. I think it's from Bill Cooper. Not that he like had it personally, but it's this. I think we read it one time. It's this like flyer that
someone probably
found on a telephone pole that warns of the coming alien invasion. This information can save your life and freedom. The coming official announcement of the alien presence on Earth. Why Star Wars, the Hubble Space Telescope, and the sudden fall of communism? So this is cool. And then at the bottom, it has like for further research and information, Arcturus Book Service, Worldwide UFO News Clippings Bureau and Public Information, William Cooper Foundation. And then it says, circulate this information and make 30 copies at the bottom of it. So maybe that's what someone did, and they put this up on like a telephone pole in their neighborhood to get
that's
the truth.
Incredible.
Get the truth out.
That's amazing. I can't beat that.
Do you have any have you gotten to the point of like anyone's unpublished research or letters or anything like that?
No. I know that you're there for sure. But I don't, you know, there's not a project that I'm working on. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Really, yeah.
Right now. I was trying to do a zine for a while and I kind of ran myself in circles with that, but I'm not researching anything at the moment. So the answer is no.
Yeah. Yeah. But that's kind of like the last, I feel like that's the last frontier of
all
this.
Yeah. Once you've got someone's paper, Serfiel, you're in for life.
Yeah. Yeah. But you know, like, so this stuff goes even beyond what's published, you know, physical media can, I really think it's in really everything. Everyone's so stuck on, so many of these heroes that like everyone else knows about, and there's good reason, you know, I look up to a lot of these people too, but I've really found, that finding an underdog, because all these were, the lines between amateurs and professionals were blurred. All these became really participatory things. Like, we all do our own research projects within this stuff. And it's really fun, though, to find an underdog or someone's stuff that was unpublished and try to pick up where they left off. You know, that's, I feel like every city has got people like this. If you can find their old website, or you can, you know, track down their family, it's like there's so many threads that never got complete. And I think it's really cool to look for these underdogs or lesser known people who are kind of unsung and maybe never even got their book finished, but could really help you along the way. So that's some of my stuff I'm really obsessed with right now, really getting into the primary source stuff. But yeah, this is all really rewarding. And I hope we've inspired some folks and to go out and get your hands dusty on some books and ephemera and records, because I really think it's important to view all this material in its cultural context in the mediums that it was initially delivered in.
Yeah, I would agree with you. And if you guys ever want to do this again, I'd be interested in hearing about some of those videos that I know you've been tracking down and sourcing.
Yeah.
All right, guys. Well, thank you so much for doing this, and Chris for being a part of this.
Thank you guys for asking me to come and chat.
Yeah, yeah. If you can tell people where people can find you, as you still got the Instagram Vintage UFOs page
I haven't posted on Vintage UFOs in a while. Not because I don't have stuff, but it's just one of those things. I fell off on it. I was doing it for years and haven't really added much to it. So you can just find me out there, you know, behind a shadowy pillar in a parking garage with a manila envelope full of the truth.
Hell yeah. That's what we need more of.
All right. Perfect. Thank you so much, Chris. And guys, you can find us anywhere podcasts are if you're listening for the first time, but we also have our Patreon, and have put a lot up there lately, but it's still there if you want to support the show. Surfio can tell you where to find that.
You can find that at at patreon.com/conspiranormal.
Yep. And stay tuned for special announcements about Strange Realities Conference. Like, we're going to be Surfio and I are talking about what we're going to do this year. So just stay for any announcement about that. And I want to thank everybody for listening to Conspiranormal.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5hetide.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5hetide.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.